When couples are married, they have a choice to make about names. For a lot of people, the default choice for a marriage between a man and a woman is for the wife to take the husband's name. But that's not the only name game in town. Sometimes both partners keep their names, sometimes hyphens get into the picture. And there's been some reporting that people are trying another approach, coming up with a whole new last name. It could be a combo of both their names, could be something completely new. Stephanie Kuntz teaches history and family studies at the Evergreen State College in Olympia, Washington. She's also director of research at the Council on Contemporary Families and the author of Marriage, A History, How Love Conquered Marriage. Stephanie, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Well, how common is this, as you're seeing it, Stephanie, that people don't just take one name of one spouse or the other, they don't hyphenate, whatever, they come up with a whole new last name?
Well, I don't think it's common enough for us to, you know, have it on the radar as, you know, some major trend. Mm-hmm. But what we saw is we saw a real uptick in women keeping their own names or doing hyphenated names in the 90s. And I think in the 80s and 90s, as 70s, 80s and early 90s, as we came out of a period in which women lost their identity completely. And by the way, we should go back to the history of this,
sure,
because that was not traditional in the 1950s, the way a woman was referred to and referred to herself as Mrs. John so-and-so, you know, not even keeping her, identifying herself by her first name, kind of burying herself. And so women, and of course, women were buried in their husband's existence legally as well, because he owned community property and stuff. So there was a period where women were pretty militant about keeping their own name or coming up with something else. That dropped off again in the 90s, in the early 2000s, I think because of some of the difficulties, you know, when picking kids up at school and, you know, whose name do you use, this sort of thing. But I think that as the age of marriage continues to rise, that in addition to the question of, you know, is this a male dominant custom, it's just not practical anymore for a woman to lose the name that she's made maybe 30, 35 years of her life. She's lived under, she's written things or produced things or held jobs down in. So people are trying to come up with creative ways to solve that.
Let's take this back even further than you just did, Stephanie. In the evolution of the concept of last names, we haven't always used them in many cultures. We used to just be Rob, and maybe as Rob, the one from Madison or something like that. Why did we start using surnames, and why did women start having to use the man's surname?
Well, it goes back and forth in very complex, interesting ways. In the Roman citizen, you start in early Rome. People had a given name and then a clan name, and there could be thousands of people in a clan. And so later during the Republic, people began to have family names to differentiate themselves. But this was only for Roman citizens. And in the Germanic and Celtic and Persian traditions, what you're talking about, you had a first name. And then if you needed to differentiate yourself from somebody else, you did it by the occupation or their living place. You know, John the Baker, Edward the Smith, Dan Glover, Danny the glove maker, Margaret the Thatcher, or Christopher Hill, you know, who lives on the hill. Sometimes there were also nicknames like, you know, Edward Short to indicate that he was short, or maybe sarcastically that he was tall. It was the Normans, when they conquered England, who brought these laws of coverture that a woman's existence was totally subsumed in her husband's. And they're the ones who introduced surnames in England. And they spread very, very slowly. In England, they didn't take root in Scotland or Wales till much later. In countries, I mean, in areas that had these strong female controls, women tended to take their husband's name because the inheritance went through her woman's earnings, property, and legal existence were subsumed under her husband. On the other hand, we should remember that this was a very hierarchical society, and hierarchy often outweighed rank hierarchy often outweighed gender. So in 14th century London and other medieval cities, male apprentices often took the surnames of their masters, and upper-class women were often exempted from these gender hierarchies. The word Mr. Larson, whatever, is means master, right? And Mrs. originally stood for mistress, someone who governs. It had nothing to do until the 18th century with a woman's marital status. A woman who was unmarried, businesswoman, could call herself Mrs. And in Sweden, incidentally, the word husband, which meant master, was applied in legal documents to women who were property owners, as well as men who were property owners. So it's a really complex thing. And in many areas, people took the last name of their land holdings, you know, so the Eleanor, Duchess of Aquitaine, Ferdinand of Aragon and Isabella of Castile, when they married, she didn't take his name or vice versa. So there have been a lot of variations in this in history. And in Spanish, in Spain today, somebody like Picasso, we know him by his maternal name because you take the paternal name first and then the maternal name. And so the maternal name is sometimes what we know some of these famous Spaniards under. Although, of course, her mother got his name from her father. So it's not like the egalitarian form that some feminists would like to see in the naming practices.
We're talking about last names with Stephanie Kuntz from the Evergreen State College in Olympia, Washington, and the latest trends in whether people take their spouse's name, make up a new name. You can join in with your thoughts and experiences at 800-642-1234. Stephanie, you mentioned in the 70s, 80s, maybe a little bit in the 90s, there was a backlash for many people against that default position where a woman takes husband's last name. Talk about some of the reasons that led to that.
Well, it was based on it wasn't some sort of symbolic feminist, you know, making a fuss about nothing. It was because right up until the end of the 1960s, women were literally subsumed under their husbands. A woman in 1974, as late as 1974 in New York, I remember reading a case where a woman whose husband was in an insane asylum and who wanted to rent an apartment to be close to him had to go to the mental institution and have him sign the lease. Women couldn't take out credit cards in their own name. They, in the states that had community property, the man could dispose of his share, but the woman could not dispose of hers. So this was, you know, we weren't completely covered as back in the 18th and 19th century when a woman married everything she earned or brought with her at marriage belonged to her husband. But you still had this notion that is legally called coverture, that your legal existence was subsumed in many ways in your husband's. And women didn't like that for some odd reason.
I want to throw in another twist now with modern marriage. Now we have same-sex marriage legalized. What are we seeing? How are same-sex couples resolving the what's our last name issue?
Well, I haven't really studied that. I don't know of anybody who has actually gone through and quantified that. But among the people that I know or work with or whose work I follow, I know that many of them keep their own last names, and others have been doing this kind of hyphenated. And a few have been doing what you talked about at the beginning of the program, actually coming up with a new name that they think represents both of their individual histories or interests. And that can be, I imagine, quite a fun little project to come up with something like that.
We're talking to Stephanie Kuntz right now, professor of family studies at the Evergreen State College, author of Marriage, A History, How Love Conquered Marriage. She's with us to talk about the names we use after we get married and whether one or both spouses go through a name change. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about this? Maybe not even a trend yet, but it's happening. There's some reports on it. Couples opting to totally change their last names to something new. Is this something that you or your partner did? Did you consider it? What questions did you go through before figuring out the question of what name to take? Or was there a question? Did you just know what you're going to do all the way through? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up our conversation with Stephanie Kuntz, professor of family studies at the Evergreen State College in Washington and author of the book, Marriage, A History, How Love Conquered Marriage. She was with us to talk about a growing trend of families taking on new last names instead of taking men's surnames when they marry and start families, and just the general questions about what name to take after marriage. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you do this? Did you choose a new last name? What drove that decision? How did you resolve the decision of whose name to take, what name to take? Call 800-642-1234 or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll go to your calls now. Jill is with us in Madison. Jill, hi. Jill, are you there?
I am. Hello. Hi. Good afternoon.
Yeah, what did you want to tell us about, Jill?
I just thought this conversation was just interesting. I didn't realize how many people put that much thought into it, but then I started to realize that me and my husband actually did that same thing. When we were engaged in thinking about it, he had actually been adopted by his stepdad, and they are no longer in a relationship. So when we were talking about our last name, we thought, how great would it be to take his grandparents' name, so to get back to his mother's maiden name and carry on that tradition, because he had such a wonderful relationship with his grandparents. So that is the route we took. So we both changed our name.
Interesting, Jill. Thanks a lot for sharing that. Stephanie, that's an interesting choice. I don't know how common that is, though.
I've heard it a few times. I don't think it's going to, you know, it hasn't gotten to the top of the charts. It's funny because I wanted to mention to you, you know, people say, oh, it's so confusing to have these extra names and stuff. But in Spain, I mentioned that, you know, people inherit not only the surname of their father and their mother, but all the ones from all of their their relatives. So that, for example, the former premier, José Luis Rodríguez Zapatero. Now, Rodríguez was his paternal surname, Zapatero was his maternal surname, but he could also have been and was in some cases referred to as José Luis Rodríguez Zapatero García Valero García Asensio. So if you think it gets confusing for us, then the Spain has managed to survive for centuries with that kind of complex naming system.
Thanks a lot for that call. Go now to Valerie with us in Rice Lake. Valerie, hi.
Hello.
Hi, what did you do, Valerie?
Well, when we got married, I took my maiden name and made it my middle name and totally wiped out my given maiden middle name.
Valerie, do you ever miss the middle name?
No.
All right. Thanks a lot for sharing that. So taking her given last name, bumping it up to the middle name, Stephanie.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because, of course, we do have this tradition that women are named either after their fathers or after their husbands. And so we do lose the maternal line in ways that, for example, in Iceland, they don't necessarily do. So that's a problem. And there's no easy way to do it, except perhaps by coming up with an invented new name. But then you lose both sides. So, you know, I think that it's important that people think about this only as a symptom of how we want to negotiate new relations in a world that is changing, but it's not a make or break decision for your relationship. I can guarantee you that.
Valerie, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Stephanie, is this something where this idea of we have a choice in our name, it's an individual decision that says something about us as a couple, as individuals, is that kind of different than it used to be where it was maybe more of a family issue?
Well, yes, absolutely. I mean, in general, we have developed a lot more tolerance and acceptance of people's individuality. You know, 50, 60 years ago, parents wanted their kids to follow in their footsteps or go a little further, but they were very, very concerned with teaching them, you know, the family traditions. Now, parents say, I don't care what you are. You know, I want you just to be happy. I want you to do something worthwhile. And we do that in our parent-child relationships, and we do it in our relationships with each other. And the big, you know, dance that we are trying to do, something that nobody in history, I think, has ever tried to do before. So when you get discouraged, it's important to bear in mind that this is a grand new experiment. We are trying, I think, in our romantic relationships, in our marriages, to combine a real commitment to putting the other person's needs right up there alongside your own, but also to preserving one's own individuality. And that takes a lot of thought and a lot more negotiation than back just only 50 years ago, when it was just expected that the wife would subordinate her individuality to that of her husband, and her husband could take that for granted. So we're doing really interesting things in family life, and I don't think that they're bad things, but they are challenging things. How do we honor that individuality, but don't turn it into kind of selfish individualism?
We're talking to Stephanie Kuntz from the Evergreen State College in Olympia, Washington, talking about marriage and names, the decision of whose name to take, who changes a name, if anyone, when a couple gets together, gets married. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and maybe the decision you made. Do you think we should stick with what used to be the full-on default? Woman takes husband's name, at least in a marriage between a man and a woman, or should it be more of a choice? Which way did you go? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Anne joins us now in Two Rivers. Anne, hello.
Hi. When my husband and I got married in the early 80s, we had a lot of discussion about which last name to take. And my husband asked if I would take his last name, and I said, well, would you consider taking my last name? And he said, well, no. And I said, then, well, my answer is, well, no, I won't take your last name. And we settled on a combined name, which was Henner, which was a nice, easy name to spell. And we tried it out before we got married. The church we belonged to only knew us as Henner. And then in the end, when we actually got to the marriage ceremony, my husband is the only male in the family, and he panicked and backed out and said, no, I want to keep my own name. So I ended up keeping my own name, too.
And thanks a lot for sharing that story. Stephanie, I mean, it's symbolic, the names, but it's important to our identity. But that really points toward what you were just saying, that it's a negotiated process, not an assumption that one party is going to give up on this one right away.
Absolutely. It is a negotiated process. And it has to be, as men and women have different backgrounds. I, for example, when I got married, I had already published things under my own name. My husband had not. We kept our own names. But, you know, now he gets occasionally referred to as Mr. Kuntz, and that's not his real last name. So, you know, fortunately, he has a very strong ego. It doesn't make him feel threatened. But these are, you know, these are the sorts of things we have to deal with now that we're taking for granted, most of us, that this should be an egalitarian thing, not a one-sided decision.
Anne, thanks for sharing your story. We've got Peter with us now in Baraboo. Peter, hello.
Hello. My father came up with an idea about how to mitigate the loss of all the female names, is that you'd hold on to your own name, and so there would be different names for the husband and the wife. But if they had a boy, that boy would take the wife's name, and if there was a girl born, that they would take the husband's name.
Okay, so cross genders there, but either way, the name might go on, Stephanie. Again, I'm sure there's probably not a lot of numbers on that, but some people are trying to come up with creative solutions here.
It's wonderful to hear some of the solutions and some of the discussions. And as I say, there's no magic answer. I mean, if you want the magic solution, you need to share the housework and the childcare. that's going to be a pretty good predictor of a good marriage. What you decide about your name is not. But the fact that you're having these discussions and thinking about it and talking about it so openly, that's a pretty good sign, I think.
Peter, thanks for the call. Time for one more caller. I think Charles is with us in Sturgeon Bay. Charles, hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What did you want to tell us about?
Well, we got married back in 78, and we had a lot of discussion about this. my wife suggested that we both take a hyphenated last name, and I kind of rejected that idea because I thought it's kind of unsustainable. I mean, if we have a son with a or daughter with a hyphenated last name and marry somebody else with a hyphenated last name, I mean, where do you go with that, right?
Charles, thanks for the call. And Stephanie, I guess that would just take us to the Spanish outcome that you talked about earlier.
Exactly.
Charles, thanks a lot for the call. Stephanie, we've talked to you a lot about how marriage has changed over the years, not just names, but what you were just talking about with housework and chores and things like that. What are you watching for, symbolic or practical, when it comes to the way American marriages are developing today?
Well, I think that we are moving, that individuals are doing a lot better than our government and our employers are, that we really have got to the point where studies show that the happiest, most successful marriages are the ones where the men and women share, not divide down the middle like 50-50, but really think through and talk through what are their individual desires to do in the house and don't just assign them by gender stereotypes. By the way, this is something we can learn from same-sex couples, that they tend to talk that through a lot more because there's not obvious, oh, well, you're obviously going to do that because you're the girl and I'm the boy. So people are talking these things through, and we keep running up against the fact that there are so many stereotypes and so little accommodation for real sharing. For example, we don't have, we're the only country in the world that advanced country in the world that doesn't have maternity leave, but there are many countries like us that don't have paternity leave, and you're not going to get equality until men get access back to family life, just as women get access into work life.
Stephanie, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
That's Stephanie Kuntz, professor of family studies at the Evergreen State College in Olympia, Washington. She's the author of the book Marriage, A History, How Love Conquered Marriage. She joins us today to talk about couples and how they choose their last names, if one takes the other one, if they make up a new one. Lots of solutions. Keep sharing your thoughts on the Ideas Network Facebook page.